This is Oliver Marty, and you're listening to Pro Lacrosse Talk.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Courier, Ogden.
Kylie O'Miller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Bird.
Kayla Trainer fires to score.
You kidding me?
By Dylan Ward.
Gets topside, Rambo scores!
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Adam Moore and Hutton Jackson.
Welcome to another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk. Guys, we have a jam-packed episode for you today. We are talking all three professional lacrosse leagues for the first time in a long time as well, too. Going to have your PLL draft coverage. Talk a little bit about this upcoming college draft. Going to talk about the tour stops that were just recently announced. We also have a location for the Athletes Unlimited League that's going to happen for 5 weeks during the summer. And then we have a little bit of NLL too with the Albany Firewolves, the newest team added. They just revealed their new name and logo. And we have some thoughts on that. So Adam, first off, how are you doing today? And what are your thoughts on this week of jam-packed pro lacrosse news?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of was the calm before the storm for a while there. We've been waiting for some news. Obviously, we had kind of a little bit with the entry draft for the PLL a little bit ago, but lacrosse is in full swing, man. So excited to get going and talking about these tour stops and all the awesome news in the PLL, the AU, and with the NLL. Excited to get started.
Yeah, we're just 6 weeks away from professional lacrosse, live professional lacrosse. We are super amped. I mean, the college draft really snuck up on us. Despite them pushing it back, it still feels like it snuck up on us.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk that in depth in terms of, you know, team needs. And we're going to have a little conversation around, you know, who should go number one overall. We're also going to talk about the tour stops as well. But I think the biggest news we want to hit on first off is the NLL name announcement of the Albany Firewolves. Now, you know, I wasn't too shy about saying I wasn't a fan of the Firewolves, but man, that logo that they revealed, I might start to become a believer a little bit because that was a pretty sweet logo that they unveiled and it was not what I expected. But what were your thoughts on the unveiling of the Firewolves?
Yeah, you know, after kind of hearing Firewolves owner Oliver Marty discuss kind of the options they went through as a team to get to this name, it's grown on me for sure. I really like the logo, as you said, really think it's cool that they added the AFW in the logo. I think that crest is going to look phenomenal on a jersey. I can't wait to see the variations of jerseys.
Yeah, and I hope they don't dial it back. I hope they're going to kind of go a Flames look, you know, kind of like the Blaze did in the early iterations. Like, don't be afraid to like go crazy. You know, you have a lot of these jerseys in the NLL that you know, push the boundaries a little bit. You know, the Roughnecks have the oil rig on the side of their jerseys, you know, Riptide, they kind of have the waves on pattern on their jerseys, Swarm, the honeycomb pattern, you know, so these NLL jerseys tend to be, you know, a little bit more pushing the boundaries. And I hope that's what we see from the Firewolves. Like, you know, give me a little bit of a Boston Blazers feel to these jerseys, you know, from the early 2000s, 2009, I think was when they came around again. So give me that kind of for the jerseys. Again, yeah, I agree with the logo. I think it's going to look sweet if they, you know, have a big wolf head on the front of their jerseys. I think it'll look great. Again, still going to take a little while for me to warm up to the name, but no pun intended. But, you know, that's just probably because I was so attached to Attack. But, you know, again, the Wolf is right there front and center. Like Oliver said, like, you know, it has ties to the Black Wolves and the Albany Attack. They really wanted to pay homage to both those teams that came before them. So, you know, there's a lot of thought that went into it. And, you know, again, that Wolf head is menacing. So I'm glad they went all out. I'm glad it's not, you know, cartoony at all. It is like, it's fierce. And I think this team's going to be fierce on the floor too, because as we remember, we're 2 years removed now from, you know, when they were last on the floor, but they were the top team in the NLL. Obviously, Callum Crawford left in free agency to go to the Riptide, but this team's going to be pretty formidable on the floor. So definitely excited to see them take the floor in December. Now let's move on to another league that's going to be its first iteration this summer, and that's Athletes Unlimited League, the Women's Lacrosse League. They're going to be playing at Maureen Hendricks Field in Boyds, Maryland, the DC metro area for 5 weeks. We kind of had heard rumblings that it was going to be Maryland, and you know that was confirmed last week. And we're definitely excited to see this league kind of come to fruition. And I think something that's interesting too is we're still waiting to hear like all the players that are signed up, but there's some room too for some current college players to come in and play this summer as well. So I think that's really, really exciting. You know, are we going to see Charlotte North play this summer? I don't know if she's going to use her fifth year option next year, but I mean, if she's out there, that's going to bring eyeballs immediately on the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a little bit different from the talk we'll talk about from a college draft side of things, right? Because of the makeup of the AU, it's going to be new teams every week. So you could have, instead of just having one draft, obviously, like the PLL and NLL have, we're going to have drafts to talk about every week with the AU. So that's going to be a really excited variation to the sport. It's going to bring a lot of eyes, hopefully, to an awesome game.
Yeah, no, and that's why I'm interested to see how these players are signed on. You know, I'm sure they'll just sign with the league, but, you know, there's going to be limited spots for a lot of top talent coming out of this women's college season as well. So definitely excited to see that iteration, you know, excited what's coming next for the future of women's lacrosse. And I think this different model will hopefully get more eyeballs on the sport and allow it to really grow and take it to the next level. So it's going to be different than what we're used to, but it's definitely going to be fun. Again, you know, having a draft every week and seeing the combinations of all-star players on a certain team each week is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And as of now, there are 38 roster spots taken up in the AU. 56 is going to be that total. So 18 spots up for grabs right now when it comes to those AU spots. So as you mentioned, some players still yet to sign that were playing for the WPLL last year. In addition to the players coming from the college ranks, it's going to be really awesome to see them play in the DC metro area this summer. We're going to have two leagues holding championships in the DC area this summer.
No, it's going to be fun. I thought that was like my favorite thing is the fact that the DC area is not only getting the AU league, but we're also getting the championship for the Premier Lacrosse League as well. Now I am a native of Northern Virginia, right outside DC. So DC sports, Baltimore sports fan, seeing them choose Audi Field as the location for the championship really excited me. And, you know, we still get to Philadelphia along the way, Adam, too, in the semifinals. So I know we're planning on both being at the semifinals and the championship for the PLL, but let's dive into this tour stop schedule that they released last week as well. They're starting off in Gillette at Gillette Field in Foxborough. Kind of thought that was going to be the plan. What we're hearing is that training camp's going to be actually at Gillette as well the week prior leading up to it. That way they can have everyone quarantined, get there, you know, kind of bubble them. You know, again, I think with things opening up, there's going to be, obviously they're doing a tour model, so there's going to be a little bit less restrictions than they had to with Utah, but they're still, you know, having those safety protocols, and that'll allow them to have that opening weekend in Foxborough. But let's go through these tour stops. You got Foxborough week one, then they go down to Georgia week two, Homewood Field, you know, your backyard, Adam, in Baltimore, week three, Shewart Stadium, which is, you know, was home to the Lizards for a long time on Long Island. Then they're going to Minneapolis, you know, with our friends, where our friends Epic are located. So that's pretty cool for us. PayPal Park in San Jose is the all-star game. We've had a lot of people talk about how they really like the San Jose venue, which, you know, was something I didn't really realize until we started talking to a lot of these players about, you know, how great it was when they were stopped there in year one. Widener Field in Colorado Springs, that's a soccer stadium. So not Denver this year, but still going out to Colorado where there's a big lacrosse population, which is great. Albany's going to show out for sure when they come to town at the Tom and Mary Casey Stadium again. And then that's the final weekend of the regular season, which leads us into quarterfinals in Utah, Salt Lake City, semifinals in Philadelphia, and then the District of Champions, Washington, D.C. for the championship. So very, very exciting. And something interesting to note is there's actually a two-week gap between the quarterfinals and the semifinals. So the teams that are making those semifinal matchups are going to have a little bit of time for preparation. They're going to have a lot of more time too from a media side to kind of hype up the semifinals and the championship, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going to kind of get it a few breaks in this season, but we're getting up to five games in a weekend, Adam, which is not, I don't think what we were really expecting. We thought maybe the maximum four, but we thought there might be some buys. It's going to be off to the races, and there's going to be a lot of back-to-backs for some teams. You know, it doesn't look like any team has to play a game after, you know, back-to-back days, but they're playing Friday night. They might be playing Sunday night as well, which is not a lot of time to prepare for another team. So Adam, you know, what do you think of this touring schedule? You know, any favorite stops and what matchups are you looking forward to the most coming up?
Yeah. You know, anytime you can get home to Philly is always exciting, especially for kind of what the stakes are going to be at the end of the season in the semis to make a trip to the championship is always a good one. And Homewood, everyone loves playing at home one, so that's also an awesome venue. But kind of from a matchups perspective, I'm really excited, at least for week one, once they go to Gillette, to see these Water Dogs and the Cannons play. You know, last year's expansion franchise, this year's expansion franchise, the Water Dogs didn't get a lot of time to gel, and we kind of saw that maybe be one of the crux of their issues in the bubble last year. But they had an off season. They're going to have some time in training camp, and I'm excited to see those two teams go at it, considering how many new parts both squads have.
Yeah, and it's theoretically a home game for the Cannons. You know, obviously they're not location-based anymore, but their ties are very strong to the Boston area, both player-wise and, you know, franchise-wise. So, yeah, I think it's definitely going to be an interesting one. Some of these matchups, too, you know, not particularly maybe cities-wise, but just based on the personnel, like I'm really looking forward to see Rob Pinnell facing his old team in the Atlas. Obviously, it will be fun to see the Atlas play the Cannons as well. You know, Paul Rabel facing his old team. Brent Adams facing the team that picked him up in expansion and then traded him away. You know, so Brent Adams has a little bit of revenge, I think, you know, facing a lot of different teams this year. So those are some matchups. I mean, and then the Chaos versus the Archers in Albany is going to be fun because Connor Fields is now going to be on a different team returning to Albany. So that game is going to, you know, definitely be probably the one that all the Great Dane fans are marking on their calendars. And then, you know, the Whipsnakes going up against the Cannons is another one too that's going to be really interesting in week two because they're theoretically the defending champs, both those teams. Obviously, the Whipsnakes won it in the PLL last year, but the Cannons, I think, still consider themselves defending champs as well with the people on their roster and the fact that they won it in the MLL last year. So those are some of the matchups I'm looking forward to. Obviously, it'll be fun to see how the season goes, but I don't know. Any other matchups for you, Adam?
One in particular, you know, we have to wait till week five, but to see the arguably the biggest rivalry right now in the league is Woods Whips, right? And we have to wait until week five when they're in Minnesota to get that matchup. So that's one obviously that always is marked on my calendar as well.
And as I alluded to, something that's kind of interesting is the fact that some teams are going to have a lot of back-to-backs. So we had actually one of our listeners throw out a tweet and tag me in it. And he looked at, you know, the back-to-backs that teams have to face when they have a doubleheader weekend. And so pretty much determining what is most favorable for a lot of these teams. And the Chrome are playing people on a back-to-back four times this season. The next closest is the Cannons and Archers too. And then you have Chaos are only playing a team coming on their second game of the weekend once, Atlas only once, War Dogs once, Whipsnakes once, and Redwoods zero times. So Redwoods, the schedule didn't do the Redwoods any favors. They're not playing any teams on short rest, you know, where they'll actually have some short rest weekends themselves. All teams will, but, you know, the Chrome are really going to probably benefit from having to face a team that had already played a game on a Friday. It looks like, you know, four times this season. And obviously scheduling is tough when you're dealing with 3 days in a weekend. So, you know, obviously that not really, it wasn't anything purposeful, but Chrome benefit a little bit from that. So shout out to Matthew Amato who discovered that little tidbit on the scheduling and for him doing that research. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, obviously these are our matchups we're looking forward to just on paper right now. That's going to change by week two or three, depending on where teams are at in the standings. It's going to be interesting to follow kind of the standings too, because teams are going to have played more games than others throughout the season. It won't be till the very end that team. So you might have a team that has a doubleheader towards the end of the regular season that's going to need to win both those games or maybe is waiting to see what another team does. So going to be a lot of playoff races facing, and we're not sure if all teams are going to make the playoffs or not. We're still waiting on those details. I think it might be maybe a team's, everyone makes it, but two teams get a bye is what it looks like with the three playoff matchups that opening weekend. That would probably make the most sense to have, you know, six teams play each other with the other two getting a bye, but we'll definitely see, have to wait and see how that works out. You know, maybe, you know, you still have two teams that are at the bottom playing for a draft pick where the other two teams are playing in and you give the top two seeds a bye. I think that's probably how it's going to shake out because you got three games in the quarters, two games in the semis still, one in the championship, obviously. So I think that's probably how it's going to shake out. But again, that's all speculation at this point. We'll find out soon enough, but that wraps up our discussion of the tour schedule. We have something bigger coming up very more imminently, and that is the college draft in a week. So we're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, Duke Cannon, and then we'll dive into that discussion. Today's episode is sponsored by Ducan Supply Co. Ducan is a men's body care brand that features an array of military-inspired products, from their signature big-ass bar of soap to their bourbon-infused beard oil. I personally use their Big Bourbon Beard Oil that's made with a hint of Buffalo Trace. I like the oak barrel scent that it gives off, and it makes me feel good about my beard, even if it's not as nice as the one that Adam's sporting these days. As an Army Reservist, I also love that they donate a portion of their proceeds to U.S. veterans. So go ahead and check out Ducanon, use our code LAX10 to receive 10% off your order, and find your own signature scent.
Welcome back to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network.
Welcome back, everyone. Now it's time to dive into the PLL College Draft discussion. We have a lot to talk about. I think the biggest is, you know, who goes number one overall. For a while, I think Michael Sowers seemed to be a lock, but that's starting to be a little bit less clear and clear. You know, not based on Sowers. I think he's still playing well at Duke, but I think based on these teams' makeup. But we're going to go through each team's needs. But let's first start about this discussion. You know, Paul Carrick put out his big board and his top three potential number one picks. And he had Michael Sowers, Jared Bernhardt, and Jeff Teat. Now, Jeff Teat hasn't played this year because Cornell was not able to play. Michael Sowers is on Duke, and while he's been playing well, I think, you know, against the ACC competition, he probably isn't having as good a year as he did when he was at Princeton last year to start and during his career. And then you got Jared Bernhardt, who's really lighting it up for Maryland, but, you know, he's a little bit of a different – he's more of an attack midi hybrid. So, you know, a team that may need a Teat or Sowers may not necessarily go after Bernhardt, and vice versa, a team that's going after Bernhardt might not need the other two. So, regardless, all three of these, I think we can safely say are generational talents. They're going to make an impact in the PLL. But if you're the number, if you have the number one pick, not necessarily saying you're Coach Rubio with the Atlas, but let's say, like, you know, clean slate, your team, it doesn't matter what your team makeup is. If you're picking one guy to go number one, Adam, who are you picking?
No, it's tough. They're all generational talents, as you mentioned, but I think you mentioned him. He hasn't played this year. He's going to be very ready to go once the PLL kicks off this summer. And I'm going to go with Jeff Teat. He's super versatile. You know, Michael Sowers can play and destroy people's ankles at X. Jared Bernhardt, as you said, is a super versatile guy, but I really think Teat is the guy I'd go with. You know, if he does go number one, he'd be the second player in the last couple years to get drafted in number one in two different leagues since Lyle Thompson in 2015, only third player in pro lacrosse league history to go 1-1 in both drafts. He's just a phenomenal talent. He's going to be ready. He's going to have the rest he needs. And I think he's a phenomenal pick, especially, I know you said not necessarily taking that selection as Coach Rubior, but I think he'd be a phenomenal fit in particularly for that Atlas squad.
Yeah, no, you mentioned you put him in good camp. You had Lyle Thompson, who was drafted by the Launch and the Swarm first overall. And then you had Kevin Crowley by the Hamilton Nationals and the Philadelphia Wings, original Philadelphia Wings, who are now the Albany Firewolves, we had after, you know, a few moves. But yeah, no, very interesting. That's some good company that Teat would be in if he is drafted number one overall. I agree. I think Teat's the most complete player, you know, probably available in this draft on the offensive end. You know, again, it's interesting though, because the Atlas do have Mark Cockerton and Chris Cloutier. Now, again, if you ask me who's the best of those three, I'm going with Jeff Teat, especially, you know, he's a little bit younger than both those guys, well, particularly Cockerton. You know, Cloutier is not too far removed from a championship win with UNC. But, you know, again, I think you make room for Teat, right? And I think they really like Eric Law behind. You know, a lot of people are like, well, Sowers would be that guy at X, and I think he would, but you got to look at what the Atlas have done in the past. And it's not necessarily like to say that's what they're going to do this year, but they like to invert a lot with John Crawley, Joel Tinney. Obviously you got Eric Law, who's, you know, can play from X, but also is, you know, a crease presence as well. And then, you know, they picked up Dan Beccaro in this entry draft. So yeah, they have a lot of pieces there. That's why it's like, you know, on paper, I don't know if Sowers or Teat is definitely like the like, perfect fit on the Atlas on, you know, for both of those guys, but they're also way too good to like pass up on both of them as well. So it's going to be one or the other, I think. But I'm going to lean towards Teat as well. I also think Jared Bernhardt could be a good guy for this Atlas team as well. You know, if you run him from the midfield, you know, they still have the guys that they want on offense. Brendan Sunday can play attack. Again, we already mentioned Dan Beccaro. So I'm leaning towards Teat. Wouldn't shock me if it was Sowers too. I'm not in the camp that, you know, it's Sowers or bust at number one. And I think, you know, if you look past the Atlas to number two pick with the Water Dogs, I think that's Sowers is a much better fit on the Water Dogs, because I think Coach Copeland wants, you know, that more traditional X run offense where you have Sowers from behind and then he can feed, you know, Ryan Brown and Kieran McCardle. Like those guys are righty and lefty shooters. You know, they can play in a variety of different ways. They can, you know, find space, you know, off of picks. They can still dodge too, but those guys are shooters. And, you know, you got Feeder and Sowers. Those are much clearly defined roles. And that was something that the Water Dogs were lacking last year, is there wasn't a defined role for a lot of these attackmen. So I think, you know, they cleared it out a little bit, added the piece in Ryan Brown. And I think Sowers would fit in much better on the Water Dogs than necessarily the Atlas. But again, we're talking about Michael Sowers and Jeff Teed here. You can find space on any team on this roster for them, arguably. So yeah. That's kind of where we felt the number one discussion. Right now, we both are feeling Teed.
Yeah, and you know, it's really interesting to kind of contemplate these top three guys, because two of them are playing and one's not. It's not really necessarily what have you done for me lately when it comes to talking about Jeff Teed. We're going off of his phenomenal career at Cornell up to this point and not necessarily this season. So, but the projectables are there for him. I think he's going to, his style of play really suits what the PLL is going towards. And we both have him at number one. I could see him dropping to two potentially, but I think he does go to the Atlas. And wouldn't it be nice for Michael Sowers, Philly area native, to go to a team? And I want to hear more people call him the Water Dogs. So it would only make sense that he heads to Coach Copeland's squad.
Yeah. And you know, with Michael Sowers too, which I think is interesting, is it's like, you know, we've seen a lot of, we haven't seen any of Teat this spring, which, you know, kind of makes him not as top of mind. But then Sowers is kind of the opposite effect. Like he's going to a crowded Duke team that has a lot of talent on that team. Whereas when he was at Princeton, he was the guy and he had to be the guy. And now he's kind of taken, you know, less of a star role, not because he's not still a star caliber player, but he's had to do less, you know, on this Duke offense. And he's still performing at a high level. So it's not to say that he's not, you know, performing at a high level, but I think that's why, you know, his draft stock is maybe fluctuating a little bit. Whereas he was the consensus number one for a while now, it's kind of like, well, you know, let's, you know, slow our roll a little bit. There's still a lot of talent out there. So again, I would be shocked if, you know, Sowers falls any lower than two or three. But I also don't think he's a lock necessarily for number one.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with any of them. And like we'll talk about in just a couple seconds here, there are so many players that I would love to have on my squad if I'm one of the eight PLL coaches.
Yeah, and my offensive bias is definitely showing, but there's some talented defenders and LSMs in this class that, you know, also could be top five pick as well. So let's go into each team's need. You know, we talked about the Atlas a little bit. I think their biggest needs are another playmaker, at, you know, particularly I think at the midfield or attack. But you know, you got Dan Beccaro, who's, you know, only a year off of a rookie of the year season and 2 years removed from lighting up at Georgetown. You know, they have Brian Costabile, who's a two-way threat. They had Brent Adams via trade. You know, I'm really high on Mark Cockerton as well. You know, so they have a lot of talent. I mean, so it really, whoever they add, it's just, you know, adding to another wealth of talent that they have. But I think that's where they go, maybe in the first round. But I could also see them adding a D-Mitty. Remember, they got two picks in this first round, number one and number eight. And if I'm the Atlas and I'm looking, you know, maybe I fill that hole on the offensive side, I'd consider maybe looking at a Ryan Tarasenko or Peter Dirth, who is, you know, really locked down short stick defensive middies. Tarasenko can also push it on the offensive end probably a little bit more than Peter Dirth can. So I think you'll look for one of those guys to maybe get drafted at eighth. You know, I think that's where another hole they have. You know, it'd be awesome for them to have another guy that's really their go-to short stick defensive middy. Obviously they have Jake Richard. But I think they could stand to reason to add another guy that could, you know, help them out on the defensive middy side of things. So those are where we see their needs going a little bit. Obviously they have a lot of picks in this draft. They have the most, so they're going to be able to make, you know, a lot of moves and take some players to camp and kind of figure it out there. But, you know, also it means a clean slate. There's a little less chemistry there that they're going to have to work out before the season. Now, moving on to the Archers. The Archers are an interesting spot. This kind of leads us to the number four, number five discussion, because right now you have the Redwoods at number four and the Archers at number five. Both those teams, I think we would both agree, are a dominant faceoff guy away from being a contender. They're probably already contenders as is, but a faceoff guy would cement them as one of the contenders of the PLL this season. And the Archers right now, I don't think they can get TD without trading up. You know, the Redwoods are going to take the best faceoff guy available, and I think they have their eyes set on TD Erland. Now, the Chrome are sitting there at three, pretty content with where they're at, I think, in all position groups. I think they would stand to reason to maybe draft another defender. I'm kind of leaning towards a JT Jal Harris. Maybe they draft Jared Bernhardt, bring him on with his brother Jesse Bernhardt. You know, they have a lot of options. But if I'm Coach Sudan, I'm probably fielding some questions from the Archers and the Redwoods. You know, I think I'm having some open dialogue with Nat St. Laurent and Chris Bates, because if I'm Nat St. Laurent, I think TD falls to me at four unless the Archers find a way to jump me. So maybe, you know, you're not that comfortable at four and you try to trade up. And we've already talked to Coach Nat St. Laurent. He has been making some moves in the draft front with the possibility of trading some more draft capital to get a guy that he wants. Now, we don't know who that guy is. I think we can both assume it's TD, but, you know, he made that Andrew Q trade to add another draft pick. I think he intends to move up in this draft. I think he's looking to make a deal with the Chrome, and maybe it's just a flip-flop of let me pick at three, I'll let you pick at four and give you another draft pick. And maybe that's all it needs for the Chrome. And they're like, sure, we'll take another draft pick, get another player, and still get our guy that we want. Because I think, you know, they're leaning towards maybe JT Jal Harris. I don't think they're going to take a face-off guy is essentially what I'm saying. You know, maybe they'll get lucky and be able to take a guy that drops, you know, if it's not Teeter Sowers at one and two.
Yeah, no, and another thing to know when it comes to a potential trade with the Woods, they don't have a second round pick right now, right? So they don't pick until the last pick of the third round after number four. So it could be a future first or something to make that jump, right? Where it'll be interesting. We're still in that early stage where the dynamics of and we talked about this in previous pods, the value of draft picks and how draft capital is utilized in a number of situations. So it'll be interesting to see if there is a bidding war for Coach Sudan for that third pick.
Yeah, because if you're the Archers at 15, you know, maybe you're comfortable with a Gerard Arcari or, you know, a Kyle Gallagher. But, you know, they're still not TD. You know, I think TD has proven, you know, right off the gate, even with Denver, you know, only losing one faceoff out of, you know, his first 25 as a Pioneer. You know, he's going to be that dominant, I think, at the PLL level. There's definitely going to be some stiff competition, you know, between Trevor Baptiste and Joe Nardella. So it's definitely not going to be, and you know, Max Adler too. So it's definitely the face-off game is going to be, again, wide open this year, I think, once again. But as for TD, I think he cemented himself as the top face-off guy. He went number one overall in the MLL draft last year for a reason. And I think, you know, if the Archers have their eyes on TD, they're going to have to, you know, make some moves to get there. And, you know, maybe that's giving up some picks that they have. Yeah, we're going to have to see what the Redwoods do. I think, you know, I think Nat is being smart, though, about not feeling comfortable at four. Because, you know, if you look at how it shakes out, they theoretically should get TD at number four. But you can never, you know, not be looking at the other teams across the way, you know, that are potentially trying to jump you and take the player that you want. So definitely interesting there. But, yeah, as we said, Archers, I think, face off. You know, two-way midi, I think they could – you know, stand to benefit from too. They have a lot of great offensive guys, but they could use a guy that can play both ways, like a Dox Aiken. So, you know, and maybe, you know, Tarasenko is another guy that they kind of look at too, but you know, they do have some really solid guys on the defensive end and really solid guys on the offensive end. So that's why I think you look for a little bit more versatility at the midfield if they're not getting their face-off guy in that first round. Moving on to the Cannons. Their team that I think could also benefit from maybe adding a few more defenders, maybe a midi as well. You know, I think a lot of people are really high on Jared Connors, but when it comes to the draft conversation, it kind of gets, again, leans towards the offensive end. He could go top five, yep, you know? So I don't know if Jared Connors falls to the Cannons where they're at, but he's another one at nine. You know, I doubt it. I think he's going in the first round, but I think they will have luckily a chance to maybe get a defender. If it's not Jared Connors or JT Giles Harris, then maybe a Jack Hilty, you know? So they obviously have a good group of defense from that expansion draft and from that entry draft and even the waiver wire. But you know, they're kind of in wait and see mode because they have eight picks before them before they can actually pick up a player. But you know, on the midfield side of things too, I think they would stand to reason if they could get a deep threat. You know, maybe they get a Connor Kearst or a Mac O'Keefe, you know, that can shoot the two-pointer, because right now that's very important in the PLL, and they have Paul Rabel who can shoot from range, and also, you know, Connor Busick, who's probably behind Mike Chanichuk, one of the best from two-point range. So they have some availability there, but, you know, they're pretty set. What do you think about the Cannons, Adam?
Heck, you mentioned Docs already a little bit there. I think he'd be an awesome addition to that Cannon squad. It just, the crux of it, we've only talked about a few teams and the names that we've been rambling off. They'd be all fantastic fits for a number of reasons, but it'll be interesting to see on draft night how these coaches really go about making their selections in terms of best available fit or best available player. We'll talk a little bit about the whips later, right? But in terms of best player available, but yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. But I would love to see Docs in a Cannon's uniform starting next year.
Yeah, and I think they used the entry draft to kind of fill the needs, and now it's going to be kind of best player available because there's so much talent in this college draft.
Yep.
But then it's hard for us to predict because we're also looking at their rosters and saying, well, these are their needs, you know. But really, if you look at all the rosters, there's really not a team that has, like, super strong needs other than maybe the two that need the face-off. And, you know, I think the Water Dogs, again, could stand or use another playmaker. But, you know, a lot of these teams are pretty set already after just going through the entry draft now. That's not to say that these college players aren't going to be able to take spots from current pros. I think they will. So that's why it's interesting. Like, you know, we're talking about needs right here, but it probably is going to flow more best player available as we go throughout the night.
Yeah. And that just makes why I'm so excited to see footage from training camp for battles for a roster position. I know I'm thinking ahead already, but training camp is going to be a really intense scene for a lot of players trying to hold on to spots or make rosters for the first time or later in their career.
Yeah, it's going to be really competitive. And, you know, who knows, like, we have a full season ahead of us. There could be guys that, you know, somehow miss the cut on a training camp at training camp. And then, you know, later in the season, there's moves made, they get brought up or whatever. We saw that happen a lot in the, you know, 2019 season. So that's also a possibility. And with this wealth of talent in the player pool, you know, as we mentioned on previous pods, like a couple guys that are still waiting, you know, to get picked off of waivers, like there's going to be some opportunities later in the season for guys that, you know, probably deserve to be playing in the pros, but maybe not, don't make a roster necessarily. So we'll definitely see. Let's move on to the Chaos. Again, I still think they need some defensive help, you know, whether it's on the defense or LSM. You know, they got Troy Ray back, which I think was big at LSM, but Matt Reese, we don't know if his availability is going to be every weekend. Hopefully it will be for them. He was able to play a lot in the 2019 and 2020 season as well, but I think they could use some more defenders. I really do. And I think, you know, if JT Giles Harris or Jared Connors is available for them at six, I think those are great picks. Maybe those two guys are already off the board and they get a Jack Hilty. You know, I think those would be great. I'm really high on Tarasenko because I think his game just fits perfectly in the PLL. And then, you know, you got a Tanner Cook as a guy that can play attack or midfield. Again, Chaos are pretty set at the attack and midfield position, but a Team Canada guy that would definitely, you know, be able to step in and mesh well with this Chaos offense. So, you know, Coach Towers also has quite a few draft picks at his disposal in this draft. So we'll see kind of how he utilizes them as well. Moving on to the Chrome. They're, again, kind of pretty set. That's why I think they're in the position that they can trade down and maybe get some more draft picks. But then also, if you're Coach Sudan, you know, what value is there really in trading down necessarily, you know, other than getting another player if that player might not be able to make your roster as well. So that's also another interesting thing with these limited roster spots. But I think, you know, maybe they go with another defender. They're pretty set, but, you know, maybe they take a Jared Connors as well or a JT Giles Harris. I know Coach Sudan has spoken highly of JT Giles Harris in the past, and they were able to kind of, you know, they want to fortify this defense. You know, obviously getting Joel White back at the LSM spot is huge for them, but I think they could add another guy. They'll get Tom Rigney too, who they drafted initially in the PLL and played in the MLL last year. So he'll definitely be a big addition. But again, military commitments come into hand with him as well. So I think they'll take another defender. And, you know, again, I think a Mac O'Keefe would be great for them because right now I think one of the Chrome's biggest need is a deep threat. You know, there's guys that can certainly score from range, but they are in the lower end of the 2-point goals. So I think it wouldn't hurt to have maybe a Mac O'Keefe that, you know, run him from the midfield and just let him rip, you know, and you got guys feeding him like Randy Stotts and Jordan Wolf. So, you know, and then you got Justin Gutterding is also a shooter. So it's like this offense is going to be just as good as it was in 2020. And I think they're honestly the most complete team right now that they can stand to, you know, pick best player available. But, you know, those are where I see their needs are. Do you agree, or do you think they might go in a different direction?
Yeah, no, I think they definitely will probably go best player available. And I think we've talked about it already, but the utilization to trade back or pick up another player to fit a really strong need for this squad is going to be something that Coach Sudan will definitely potentially look into. And I have to say, we'll talk about these in our pods going forward when we're previewing teams once rosters are closer to be complete, but they're one of the most exciting teams that I'm looking forward to watch come next year with the additions that they added, like Randy and other players we've already talked about. So I'm really, really excited and really high on this Chrome squad going into next season.
Yeah. And I wouldn't necessarily say like I have a PLL team. I know I've kind of leaned a little Archers over the 2 years, but Chrome, man, they were pulling me in a lot last year. I really wanted to see them go far, and they had a, you know, disappointing showing against the Chaos. So, you know, I love the makeup of this team. I think they have one of the best locker rooms in the PLO, and that's not to say that there's teams that don't have good locker rooms in the PLO, but, you know, I just think they have a lot of fun. The men of Chrome are a very cohesive unit, and I think, you know, having their guy in Tim Sudan last year just did wonders for them. So
Chrome improvement, man.
I love it. Yes, absolutely. And now let's talk about the Redwoods. We kind of already touched on it a little bit. I mean, real need is just face off. You know, they could add, you know, maybe another defender or whatever, you know, maybe, you know, if Jack Kilty falls to them, probably not at where they're at if they don't take him, you know, with that fourth pick, which we don't see them doing. But, you know, I think they'll add, hopefully try to get TD. We could even see them take two face-off guys, honestly. I think, you know, Gallagher and Arcari could also be an upgrade over Puskulgin. So who knows? Like, maybe they go for TD and they decide, let's get another guy. Too. I think you're going to see a lot of teams want to, you know, have two solid face-off guys that, you know, can provide a change of pace. And again, with the rules, if you have a violation, like, that's a possession that you lose if you don't have a guy that you're confident in taking that face-off. So, you know, no, they don't want to waste any possessions here. So, you know, so that's kind of how we feel about the Redwoods. You know, I don't think, you know, I don't know if you really have anything else to add, Adam. I think that's probably it, you know, in terms of the Redwoods. It's, you know, face-off guy or bust. I'm sure they'll add, you know, a few depth positions as well in this draft, but that's kind of where they're leaning. And then it brings us to the Water Dogs that I think are one of the most interesting squads as well. You know, I think if Sowers is available, they're taking him. But what are your thoughts on what the Water Dogs do potentially at number two and in the rest of the draft?
Just kind of looking at their roster, I think having a facilitator at the X like Sowers would be a fantastic addition to their squad. You know, they added a number of poles, right, in terms of Ben Randall and Liam Burns in the expansion draft. So not sure that that's the route they go at number two. I think it's going to be one of the top three offensive guys that we mentioned. If it's if Tico's one, Sowers or Bernhardt and vice versa, depending on who is that first spot. But I think offense wise goes 1-2 in the draft.
Yeah. And what do you think too, in terms of goalie position? Do you think they take a goalie in one of these later rounds? You know, I don't think goalies are really going to be too hot of commodities in this draft, but there's obviously some talented seniors that are going to be available. So what do you think they do with the goalie position?
Yeah, and it's another interesting one to contemplate, because you could argue that every other team other than the Water Dogs are completely set at the goalie position. You know, coming in to the offseason, you could talk about the Chrome looking for an heir apparent to John Galloway, and it looks like they did with Sean Scudoni, right? Couple time back-to-back MLL MLL goalie of the year. So they did. The Cannons got their guy, Nick Morocco, it looks like. So the Water Dogs are the one team, and heck, you know, Coach Copeland might beg to differ, right? He has a guy that he coached in college and really relied on last year in Charlie Cipriano. And then once he was injured, he picked Matt DeLuca high in the draft last year in the second round. So and DeLuca played well in the limited minutes he got at the latter parts of the bubble. So while a lot of fans out there may be contemplating what the Dogs could do at the goalie position, I think Matt DeLuca has something to say about that. Now, with that being said, I think some teams are going to draft goalies, right? You need bodies in cage, especially during training camp. You talk about how many quarterbacks are on rosters and whatnot in the NFL during training camp and roster cuts and whatnot. Yeah, and, you know, I could see certainly the Water Dogs picking up a goalie in maybe one of the later rounds, like an Owen McElroy out of Georgetown or Drake Porter, Mike Adler, you know, the guys that come to mind at the moment. But not just the Water Dogs, you know. I think there's going to be some fun competition. While those maybe first-string spots are taken up at the moment, those backup positions are going to be just as competitive when it comes to the goalie position this coming summer.
You know, when we mentioned goalies as it relates to the Water Dogs, another team that was looking for a backup goalie was the Whipsnakes. They actually filled that void a little bit with Reed Junkin, who they picked up in the waiver wire. Doesn't mean they won't add another goalie, I think, in this draft. You know, we could see Owen McElroy or Drake Porter or even Mike Adler going to them. You know, I think it'll be a later round, though. I think they're going to go best player available, which, you know, as we talked about, they're a team that doesn't really have necessarily any specific needs. So they'll probably go best player available in this draft. I mean, where do you think they kind of go? They're sitting at seven now in this first round. You know, I think, you know, they maybe might add another versatile midfielder or a D-middy. You know, if a Jared Connors or even a Ryan McNulty falls into their lap, that might be a good spot. You know, they added Alex Spring at LSM, but they could add another LSM, you know, provide relief. You know, Jared Connors, I think you couldn't ask for a better duo. And Jared Connors and Michael Earhart, if they're able to get him. I don't know if he'll be available to them at seven, though. I think he'll probably go higher. I don't know where, but, you know, well, what do you think the Whipsnakes do?
Yeah, man, if in one off season they're able to add a guy like Chris Aslanian, somehow Brian Cole, and Jared Connors falls to them, I will question the league itself, right? No, just jokes aside, like if they have the ability to add a guy like Jared Connors, that'd be an absolutely phenomenal pickup for them. I think, like you said, they go best player available. I think they are able to fill some holes in some finite places that just make them that much better for that three-peat run. So I don't have too much to say about the availability in terms of who they could potentially pick up, but I think they go best player available when it comes to filling some small holes that we might not even realize that Coach Staggs is really looking to fill.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and I don't think Connors or JT Dawes-Harris will be there because I think, you know, you might see the Chrome or the Chaos take it before he gets there. But, you know, Nick Grill is another Terp, another Maryland guy that might be, you know, somebody they pick up if they want to go defensive end. Again, we talked about how they don't really have any holes, so they could go offensive end as well and maybe get another deep threat to pair with Mike Chanichuk. You know, imagine Mac O'Keefe on that offense. Again, it's like there's that much talent available in this college draft that one of those guys is going to fall to them at seven. So for Stags, it's almost like just wait and see who's available still and get the best player available. But that's kind of how we feel about, you know, the Whipsnakes. Again, maybe they go D-Mitty route again. They have Charlie Hayes. They have Matt Abbott. You know, Matt Abbott's, you know, probably only got a couple more years. It wouldn't hurt for them to add another, you know, really young stud defensive midi as well. You know, and maybe a Peter Dirth or Ryan Tarasenko. So we'll definitely see. I mean, there's some players we didn't even mention, though, like Jake Caraway, Jackson Morrill, Ryan Tierney, Ethan Walker. Like, there's so much talent in this draft. I think I mentioned Connor Kearse, but, you know, maybe I didn't. If I didn't, he's definitely another guy that's, you know, given his long range shot, is going to be getting some looks in this PLO draft. And I'm sure there's a lot that I'm leaving off right now as well. But that's kind of how we feel about the college draft. I think it's again going to go, you know, more best player available than need based, but, you know, there's also some teams that have some pretty big needs right now, and they're only that need away from being a contender. So, you know, be interesting to see how this draft shapes up. We can't even decide on who's going to be number one. So I don't know if we can even predict, you know, what's going to follow after that. But that's kind of wraps up our PLL draft discussion. We appreciate you guys listening. We're really looking forward to this summer of pro lacrosse, both on the women's and men's side, looking to get to some PLL tour stops. We'll be at least at the Philly and DC, if not, you know, hopefully at Homewood as well. We're still trying to figure out our schedules as well as in terms of that, but really excited about the upcoming PLL season. And then to follow the NLL season in December too. So we won't be stopping the NLL discussions even during the summer. We'll definitely keep those going as well as more news comes out and free agency gets underway and all that stuff. So we have another college draft, not too far, just a couple months away from that as well in September, November timeframe. Between then is usually when they have the college draft for the NLL as well. So we'll still be talking a lot of draft coverage this summer as well. But appreciate you guys tuning in. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to give us a 5-star review. It really helps us, you know, continue to move up in the ratings. And we hope you guys tune in next time to Pro Lacrosse Talk. Today's episode is sponsored by Ducan Supply Co. Ducan is a men's body care brand that features an array of military-inspired products, from their signature big-ass bar of soap to their bourbon-infused beard oil. I personally use their Big Bourbon Beard Oil that's made with a hint of Buffalo Trace. I like the oak barrel scent that it gives off, and it makes me feel good about my beard, even if it's not as nice as the one that Adam's sporting these days. As an Army reservist, I also love that they donate a portion of their proceeds to U.S. veterans. So go ahead and check out Ducanon, use our code LAX10 to receive 10% off your order, and find your own signature scent.